The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast is with you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host each week of the Milwaukee Bucks podcast. And this week, I'm going to do something a little different. You know, I listen to my old podcasts sometimes, and it's not too much droning on by me at the beginning. So we're bringing in Matt Velasquez right out of the jump. There's no intro here. Matt Velasquez is here with us. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Glad to be starting off earlier in the podcast.
Yes, you were you're breaking up there, but I know you said you were great, and that's probably because the Bucks are still a pretty good team. But I'm gonna be honest, man, I'm a little bummed out by this week. This week we did not have the best Bucks. A couple close losses, a loss to the Suns, a loss Monday night to Charlotte. We're recording this on Tuesday. But for the most part, the Bucks now they're a quarter of the way through the season, and it's obviously hard to be disappointed with where they're at. They got the second best record in the East. I know you're going to be writing a little bit about what's the sort of a state of the Bucks after a quarter of the season at the quarter poll. Generally speaking, they're good. But what are some of the takeaways that you've had here after 1/4 of the season is done?
You know, I think they've been not just good; they've been great. You look at. Heading into Tuesday's slate of games, they have the best net rating in the year in the league, which is something that I'm sure a lot of teams look at to kind of decide, you know, who's the real deal early on in the season. You know, now that we have a decent sample size, you look at the simple rating system on Basketball Reference. You know, they are far and away the best team by that metric. It's a metric that takes into account average point differential and strength of schedule. You know, they're at 12.32, and the next closest team is the Raptors, who is at 7.25. Most teams are kind of, you know, there's a window from, you know, 7.25 there down to like negative 10, almost negative 11, which is the Hawks. So, you know, the Bucks are significantly higher than the rest of the league there. They've been playing a really tough schedule, one of the toughest in the NBA. You know, and so you could look at it and say, okay, well, there are a couple games here and there that the Bucks could have or should have won. Obviously, the Suns game recently, and maybe the Grizzlies game are ones that jump out. But in general, they've been really good. Their offense is the best in the NBA. Their defense is the sixth best in the NBA. Their offseason acquisitions, most notably Mike Budenholzer, they've all hit. I mean, you look at what Brook Lopez has done. Obviously, he had that one horrendous shooting night. But other than that, you know, he has provided the space and the size that the Bucks needed inside. Ersan Ilyasova has gone through a little bit of a rough patch and an injury. You know, but he has that front court versatility and charge taking ability that the Bucks can definitely use. Dante DiVincenzo's been a revelation as a rookie, earning rotation minutes and deservedly so. You know, and Pat Connaughton's been solid off the bench. So all four of those players have been great, but the biggest change has been Mike Budenholzer putting in his schemes, building confidence, and kind of getting the most out of this team. So you put it all together, and it's been a strong first quarter of the season. Bucks are on pace for 56 wins, which, if you told that to any Bucks fan before the season, I think they'd be thrilled.
So you mentioned some people I want to talk about. Obviously, when we talk about postseason awards, the quarter point of the season is not the right place to do it. But I love to talk about this stuff and think about it. And Budenholzer will certainly be in the conversation for Coach of the Year. Obviously, Giannis, who casually finished within an assist of yet another triple-double on Monday night in a 110-107 loss in Charlotte. He'll be on the front burner for MVP. And Pat Connaughton, the guy you just mentioned, where did this guy come from? Sixth man of the year probably seems like a reach still even at this point. But man, has he been good off the bench and really one of the most reliable guys and one of the most heavily used guys off the bench, which I don't know if anybody saw coming. If the season ended today, I think a couple of those guys would win. How would you handicap those races? You think that the Bucks guys are the front runners there?
I think for MVP, I think Giannis is a clear front runner right now in the NBA, just based on what he's done. I mean, you look at the stats. You know, he's averaging 26.8 points per game, 13 rebounds, almost 6 assists, a steal and a half, 1.3 blocks. You know, he is absolutely dominant inside, 64.5% on his twos. You know, and obviously, you know, it's a three-point shooting league, but, you know, when you have an effective field goal percentage that is, you know, 58.1%, which is the best among guys on the Bucks who are playing the most consistent minutes. I think, you know, Tony Snell's is higher. He's playing 15.8 a game, but if you look at starters and guys who are really shouldering the highest load, I mean, he's got that highest effective field goal percentage. That's what you want in the NBA, is you want guys who can, you know, be efficient with the shots that they take. And so he's on pace to absolutely shatter the NBA record for dunks. The last I checked, he was on pace for over 400 dunks, which is just a mammoth number. You know,
isn't the record like 298 or something? Dwight Howard has it.
Yeah, it's somewhere around there. I'd have to look into it more. You know, a quick Google search, but he is way on pace to totally shatter it. And he's just the kind of guy who he's unstoppable. I mean, granted, like, he doesn't have that 3-point shot. His jump shot still is iffy, but if he can get that many dunks that consistently, it doesn't really matter as much if he can't shoot. If you can't stop him getting right to the hole and doing everything that he wants to do in offense, I mean, that's huge. And defensively, he's kind of the linchpin for the Bucks. You know, with his length, with his ability to help block shots, come up with steals, just contest shots to make it so that guys don't attempt shots they would normally take. You know, he's been fantastic. And there's a lot of things he was doing in past seasons. Obviously, his rebounds are way up. And I believe his assists are up too. You know, so it's similar stuff to what he was doing in the past, but now the Bucks are winning. They're consistently playing well. And he is the reason behind that. So I think he'd have to be the MVP favorite. Mike Budenholzer would be a really interesting case study for Coach of the Year. I think you look at this Bucks team, and the general perception is that roster-wise has changed. Obviously, we mentioned the incoming guys who have made a big impact, but the core was still there. And, you know, last year they were a team that was, you know, inconsistent, seventh in the East, had more talent, or at least as much, if not more talent, than the Boston Celtics did, especially missing Kyrie and Gordon Hayward in that first round series, and they still lost. And it kind of just goes to show how important and valuable coaching is. And so getting Mike Budenholzer and instilling his scheme and in growing the confidence and kind of just getting everyone to play in the right slots, that's been massive. I think the only team that I would really look at for, you know, for maybe another Coach of the Year candidate, you know, maybe you look at Doc Rivers and what he's been able to do with that Clippers team, that, you know, doesn't really have any stars, and no one's looking at them as a, you know, top team in the East or the West or really any metric of being a top team. But there they are at the quarter season mark. They're number one in the West. You know, they have fewer wins than the Warriors, but by winning percentage, they're better. You know, maybe you'd look at JB Bickerstaff from the Grizzlies and just what they're doing. But Mike Budenholzer, just the way that he has the Bucks playing right now is just kind of unexpected, and it definitely just shows the value of coaching. And you mentioned Pat Connaughton as a possible sixth man of the year. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. He hasn't gotten to that point yet. I feel like that's almost like the Lou Williams award until proven otherwise. But it might be Lou Williams' teammate Montrezl Harrell, who's I think he's gaining a lot of credit and consideration, at least at this point in the season, just for what he's done off the bench there for the Clippers. I mean, we saw him when the Bucks played out at Staples Center back during the West Coast trip, and they had no answer for him. He ate them alive inside and was a major difference in that game.
Well, we are not talking about Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams after they burned the Bucks earlier this year. They are on the blacklist, so we are not going to refer to them again. Since they are responsible for one of the six losses that the Bucks have incurred thus far.
Fair enough.
Okay, so we've talked about all kinds of good stuff there, but so do I have the right to be sad, or am I wrong to be sad? Because I feel like they could have, granted they were down 25 against Charlotte and had a shot at the buzzer, a contested three-pointer, so like that game didn't feel like they should have won. It felt like they could have won. But how do they lose to the Suns? I want to believe hook, line, and sinker in everything you're telling me. And they throw up 143 on Portland, the best team in the West at the time, demolish them the night before Thanksgiving. And it's like yet another big notch in their belt. But then they lose to a Suns team with just 3 wins. And it's just like that Memphis game. It was the exact same thing where they were down. It was pretty close throughout. Memphis, they got down a little bit more than in this game. Then they pull ahead, and there's like a couple minutes left, and you think this is it. The Bucks are going to go on this run. They've won the game. They've got it locked up, and then Devin Booker continues to hurt them, and they hit a mid-range shot just before the buzzer to take the lead. They actually, Chris Middleton hits a shot just after the buzzer that would have won the game, but am I wrong to feel like, oh man, the Bucks maybe just aren't ready, or do I have to just take a step back and say, hey, sometimes you lose games, even at home against bad teams. It happens to even the best teams.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the one, it's okay to be sad. If you're a fan of the team,
I'm so sad.
Whether it's you or anyone else, like, you're allowed to be sad. You're allowed to be frustrated and annoyed that the team that you follow, that is unquestionably the superior team in terms of talent and ability, didn't win. I called it embarrassing. People got mad at me for it.
Ooh, they did, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few people out there, but I mean, I think it's fair to say that it is embarrassing to lose to the worst team in the league. I mean, I think it's fair. And I'm not going to take that back. I'm not going to apologize for it. I think that's something that is true, but I think it can also be true at the same time. Yeah. While it can be embarrassing, it can also be something that you say, you know what, that was embarrassment, but sometimes embarrassing things happen in your life. Sometimes, you know, you eat something and it gets stuck on your face and you don't notice it and then you're embarrassed. Like
that's a very strangely specific example. Like, I'm wondering what happened to you just now.
Well, I mean,
what food was on your face?
I mean, nothing recently, but people, I mean, I have a beard right now. I'm the kind of person who I go between clean shaven and just unfettered growth. I don't really do anything with my facial hair construction. That's kind of how it is. And so sometimes, like, you eat some ice cream, like, boom, ice cream on your face. You don't notice it. Like, you know, it's just a thing that happens. And you,
how do you pull that off, by the way? Because you manage this quite well. This unkempt beard works really well for you. I'm very jealous.
Yeah, no, I really don't even think about it. That's really what the key is. You just don't think about it at all. I was actually talking to a quick digression. I was talking to Thon Maker after one game. And it was right after I had shaved, and he's like, "Matt, why'd you shave?" And I was like, "Oh, you know, it was getting too crazy. I had to let it go." He's like, "Oh man, like, I've been trying so hard. Like, some of us just like can't get that beard to grow. Like, I've been working on it, and like you could see like just a little bit." And I was like, "Oh, like Thon, like, you'll get there one day, man. Like, don't worry about it." Like, I had friends in college who like dreamed of having beards and could never grow beards, and then now they have beards. So like, you know, you just gotta give yourself some time. But anyway, like, yes, embarrassing things can happen, but it's also like, okay, it happens. Like, you look at the Bucks, like, that's their one bad loss. Like, I wouldn't count the Hornets' loss last night as a bad loss. The Hornets are a really good team. I mean, you look at net rating, and they're like 7th or something like that. I mean, that's the sign of a good team. They're only 500 record-wise, but that team, at least to me, looks like a playoff team, looks like a solid team. Kemba Walker's great. They're trending in the right direction. And they're playing at home. And so that's just a tough place to win against a team that's kind of undervalued in the standings. You know, but the Suns, that loss is not a good loss, you know. But at the same time, like, every year teams are going to do that. Like, I had this conversation with our mutual friend Eric Name, whose podcast I was on recently, and I told him that he'd have to come on to our podcast. So we're going to try and work that out.
Crossover!
Yeah.
Love it.
I'm all for it. You know, I was talking to him, and, you know, obviously we had similar conversations to this, and I was like, well, it's just for haha's sake. Let's look at the 73 win Warriors. Did they lose to bad teams? And the answer is yes. Like, ooh, you can consider that the 24-1 game against the Bucks, bad loss. Bucks were a bad team that year. And yes, ooh, the Warriors were at the end of a West Coast trip or East Coast trip. They were coming off a back-to-back overtime the night before. You can make all these excuses, sure. But the Bucks were a 33-win team that year. They weren't good. Like, no one would say, hey, that 33-win Bucks team, like, you're undervaluing them. They were great. Like, no, they were bad. And so like
throwing daggers, embarrassing loss, bad team. Matt Velasquez is here for is here to pick fights.
If someone would like to explain to me why that Bucks team was a good team, I would love to hear it. So like you could say, hey, that's not a good loss. The Warriors should not have lost that game. They were more talented. They were better. They shouldn't lose that game. You could also look at, and I didn't look up who the Warriors were playing that day, but during that 73-win season, the best regular season team of all time lost to the 17-win Lakers. Like, it happens. Like, every team is going to have that. You look at just that Friday night when the Bucks lost to the Suns. The Knicks beat the Pelicans, and the Cavaliers went to Philly and beat the Sixers. Like, bad teams beat good teams. Like, it just happens. Like, and so like you could be mad and embarrassed and frustrated and annoyed about how the Bucks did not take that game seriously. Multiple guys in the locker room said they played with the Suns, like they played down to their record. They just didn't do the things they needed to do. They didn't come out with enough passion, intensity. They're coming off the holiday, just weren't locked in enough. Those are things that you shouldn't have with a team. Like, that's not good. None of that's good. And like, you should be upset about that because you don't want to see that on a consistent basis at all. You want those things to be driven out of the locker room and everyone to play incredibly inspired every game, night after night. But when you look at it practically, like, that's just not going to happen. Like, I don't go to work every day with the same vim and vigor of certain like top days. I'm sure that applies to everyone. If you go to your job every day and you are just like killing it and like giving 135%, and like locked in every moment of your day, and if you don't take a little extra break here and there, like, then kudos to you. You are one of the best people in the world, and and I just applaud your mental toughness. But like
Matt Velasquez, motivational speaker, I love this.
But you know, the Bucks are going to have a few clunkers, and sometimes they're going to win those clunkers. They've had clunkers this year where they just, you know, that game against the Bulls where they got down by 22 in the first half, and then they came back and won. You know, they had another game right after that where they were down by 17 in the first half, came back and won. Like, when you win, it kind of hides the fact that you really didn't like give it your best shot. Like, you can kind of make up for it. And Giannis said in the locker room after one of those games, like, hey, we've relied a little bit too much on our talent to kind of get us through for wins and eventually pull them out, but they can't do that all the time. And he's right. Like, you can't do that all the time. If you get down into big holes, like, you're eventually just not going to be able to climb out of them, which obviously came to pass in a couple of recent games. But I don't think it's a reason to be like, oh, whoa, where's the Bucks? Same old Bucks. They're terrible. Like, no, like, they're still one of the best teams in the league. They're playing great. And, you know, at some point, like, when they start clicking a little bit better than they are right now, which they have fully have the capacity to do, you know, they'll really be on track to do even better things than they're doing now.
Yes, and it also should be noted that one thing we've learned about this Bucks team is that if they're down by 17 to 25 points, like you're saying, they will come back. They've done that multiple times this year and did it on Monday night against Charlotte, even though they ended up a little bit short. You mentioned that Cavaliers win, you know, and they almost beat the Lakers in what would have been the greatest moment in Schadenfreude history when LeBron came back to Cleveland. That was a really close game. That same night, the Bucks, that's a Wednesday night, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the Bucks put in perhaps their best performance of the year. You know, we're talking about the Suns game, and it obscures what an amazing game they had a couple nights earlier against the Portland Trailblazers, who came to the Pfizer Forum as the best team in the West, and the Bucks won by 43? They scored 143, and just demolished them, 143-100. Well, how do you explain that? Like, that is just an incredible performance. Is that the best game that the Bucks have had this season?
I would say so. I mean, just the most complete game and against a high-level opponent. Obviously, we know that the Blazers were at the end of a five-game trip, and they might have been tired, and I think they were on a back-to-back as far as I can recall. And so all those things kind of play into it. But the Bucks also, they just came into that game looking for revenge. I mean, they lost by 15. That was their worst loss of the season in terms of margin all year back in Portland. And after that game, you know, to a man, they all talked about how like they took that kind of personally, and they thought they played especially poor in that game, and they came back and immediately, you know, rolled against the defending champion Golden State Warriors the next night. So you knew that frustration and just annoyance with that loss and the way that they played had affected them. So now when the Blazers come back to town in a short period of time following that loss at the Moda Center, you know, they were looking for, you know, every reason to just crush it and do it early. And that's what they did. I mean, they got up and they just started just piling on the points, up by 11 at the end of the first quarter. And then, boom, the margin was 22 at halftime, and it just kept growing. I mean, their starters didn't play at all in the fourth quarter, really, and because they were up 30. And the bench unit, which features a bunch of guys who haven't gotten a lot of chances this year, but they've been practicing together and pushing each other and kind of building up their chemistry. Like, they went out there and they're like, hey, this is our chance. And, you know, they moved that margin up as high as 46, you know, because they just seemed to care more. They wanted it more. You know, Portland's bench was like, ah, whatever, let's just play at the string. And the Bucks were like, no, we're really going for real. And Christian Wood was doing some stuff. Thon Maker was making shots. Matthew Dellavedova, who in the couple games after that actually gave them a couple some important minutes against the Suns and the Spurs. Sterling Brown too, who also had a strong performance against the Spurs and had gotten more in time with Dante DiVincenzo out. Now DiVincenzo's back. We'll see how much opportunity Sterling Brown gets. But all those guys just really really brought it. And piled on. And so as a team, the Bucks played really well from 1 to 15. And, you know, that was definitely a memorable game.
I'm a little worried about Thon Maker here. We talked about how his opportunities were probably going to increase with John Henson on the sideline for an extended period of time with injury. I don't know if what Bucks fans should expect out of Thon Maker at this point. Is Thon going to happen? Are you a little concerned about where he's headed?
I think so. I think the issue is that he just doesn't provide the level of consistency that you would hope for. Like, he had games, like the game against the Bulls, like right after Henson got hurt. You know, he was solid. Like, he made three threes. You know, didn't shoot great overall, but like, he was good. You could see how he could fit. And then against Denver, just a couple nights later, didn't play very much and was minus 11 in like 4 minutes. And then he didn't play anymore. You know, then they played the Trailblazers, and, you know, a lot of his minutes came in garbage time, but, you know, he generally looked good. You go back against the Suns a couple nights later, and he's like, eh, like, just wasn't giving you anything. And so it's just back and forth for him. And I just wonder, you know, on Monday night against the Hornets, you saw the Bucks in the second half when they got down, they started switching everything on defense, and that really worked. Like, you just look at the makeup of the Bucks roster and you say, okay, like, you have a bunch of like athletic, long, versatile guys. Like, don't you think switching would work pretty well? And granted, like, I'm not an NBA coach. I don't pretend to know everything about setting up a defense. The Bucks have the sixth best defensive efficiency rating in the league, so they're doing something right. But when things aren't going right, like with their usual defensive scheme, like, switching actually helped a lot. And like, maybe Thon Maker, with his length and athleticism and foot speed and things like that, maybe he could fit into a switching scheme more often. And I know that, you know, he relishes the opportunity to be aggressive. Like, he talked to us after it might have been the Chicago game. I can't remember exactly when it was, but he was just saying that he sometimes catches himself when he's playing in their base coverage, where the center usually sinks toward the hoop to defend the rim. He catches himself sometimes staying up, and the coaches have to kind of tell him to go back. And then when Budenholzer calls push, which I guess is a different coverage where they're trapping more and hedging more, and he's staying up. You know, he loves that. He loves being closer to the ball handler and pressuring guys. You know, whether or not that works is another, you know, story entirely, but he likes to use his aggressiveness. And so harnessing that, maybe finding a way for him to work in maybe a switching, more aggressive defensive scheme, you know, could be an answer. But I think it just comes down to, he needs to find the niche that he fits in. Where are his spots to shoot from? You know, where does he need to be, and how does he need to help on defense? And, you know, what kind of communication does he need to improve There's all those types of things because they're going to rely on him. Like at some point, Ersan Ilyasova will come back and maybe he'll go to the five at certain points. But John Henson is going to be back for a while. Like, you know, we don't know exactly when. The surgery is Tuesday. We'll get more information on that after it's done. But he could be out until, you know, near or after the All-Star break. I mean, that's entirely possible. And in recent games, they've gone to Giannis Antetokounmpo in the center spot for certain stretches, which they hadn't done earlier in the season. And that's mostly because, you know, Brook Lopez can't play the whole game. Ersan Ilyasova has been hurt. John Henson's been hurt. And they think that this is a better option than putting Thon Maker out there. Thon Maker hasn't proven that he should be out there to either be alongside Giannis or instead of Giannis just for a few spot minutes, because, you know, in those non-Giannis minutes especially, the Bucks have been trending down. So, you know, we'll see what the next stage of the Thon Maker experiment brings. I'm not totally out on him, but he still, you know, has a lot of room to grow.
Yes, we like Thon Maker. He's a good beard conversationalist, and I'm definitely one rooting for him to get back into the groove of things. Speaking of injury issues, Ersan Ilyasova missed the last couple games, was out against the Spurs in the team's win there to cap the 6-game homestand at the Pfizer Forum, and then out again in Charlotte. What's the prognosis on Ersan? Is he going to be gone for an extended period of time?
I don't think so. I think just it was right knee soreness. So yesterday, Monday against the Hornets, he was active. He was in uniform, but, you know, Bud was kind of coy about whether or not he'd use him, ended up not using him. So I think just a little bit extra rest will probably help. It's possible he could be back for Wednesday's game against the Bulls, but nothing has been established yet. I haven't practiced. We're taping this early in the morning, so they haven't had practice yet, so I haven't heard about any availability he's had or might have. But, you know, I would expect that it wouldn't be a long-term thing just based on the way they've been treating it or in talking about it. But until he's back in the court, it's, you know, he's still out.
All right, so very important final issue that we need to discuss. Giannis Antetokounmpo's spin move against the Suns, ridiculousness, broke physics. They didn't win the game, but he had a play that I was burned into my memory here. We've got the book of Giannis ranking the 23 top plays in Giannis history, at least with Giannis history with the Bucks. Is that a top five? Is that a top five moment or a top 10? Like, where does that rank? Because that thing, I don't even know how to describe it. It was just a spinning, impossible corkscrew maneuver to score a basket.
I feel like it's just not iconic enough. I feel like if you're top five or top 10, like, it has to be like iconic. Like, and that one, like in a random November game against the Suns, it was super cool. Like, it was fun to watch in person, but I just don't know where it fits. I feel like it should be in there, but I just don't know exactly where to fit it. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah, because, okay, so our top five, the number one is the game-winning shot he hits at the Garden against the Knicks a couple years ago. There's a dunk in the All-Star game where Steph Curry lays down. I mean, it wasn't like a high degree of difficulty, but it was just awesome, and it was in an All-Star game. There's a play he made in 2015 against the Knicks where he makes this face at the end, sort of the birth of that mean mug that he has. That was several years ago. There's the play where he jumps over Tim Hardaway that everyone remembers. That's number four. This is all against Knicks. The Knicks. And then there's a play where he beats the buzzer on a dunk to beat the Thunder in 2017. It should not have counted. He stepped out of bounds, but no one saw it. He dunks the ball. They win the game. So those are all, like, moments more than actual physical feats of incredibleness. By the way, there's another Knicks play in the top ten. Anyway.
Jumping over Tim Hardaway is a pretty nice feat of athleticism.
Yes, that's true. But that one is like, when I think of the greatest play Giannis has ever made, that's shortlist right there. That's probably the thing I think of. I think of him jumping over Tim Hardaway. So that's still iconic enough. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if it's top 10 even, because these are pretty amazing dunks. I mean, maybe it's number 10. I have an alley-oop. One of the first games Eric Bledsoe played was against the Spurs in San Antonio.
Yeah, that was the first game.
Yeah, okay, so the first game, he throws down an alley-oop to Giannis, so there's sort of that, like, Bledsoe connection that makes that kind of interesting, but I might put this one at number 10, or maybe number 11 or 12, right in there, because that was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I'd have to definitely consider it even more, but that's, It's definitely up there somewhere. I feel like your job curating this Book of Giannis is incredibly hard. We mentioned all the dunks this year. Like when you have like 400 dunks, obviously he's not there yet. He has to continue that pace. But if he gets to like 400 dunks, that's like so many opportunities to like dunk on people and do like weird things that we've never seen. And like mean mug, like all those types of things, like even just like a super cut of like all the dunks this season would be like super long. It'd be almost as long as like all of Ersan Ilyasova's charges over the past decade.
Yeah, more visually appealing to watch the dunks than it is the charges.
Would people watch a supercut of every Ersan charge? Because I feel like it'd be like so weird. It would be mesmerizing.
I could tell you that high school coaches around the country would watch that supercut. They would love that. People who are into basketball, true basketball nerds, would be all about the charges drawn. Because half of them are not charges, but still, the artwork that it takes to make that happen, basketball nerds would be into that. Yeah. Other people just want dunks, Matt.
So if we have any basketball nerds listening, I am sure we do, like, and if someone has the ability to put together an Ersan Ilyasova charge supercut, I will watch the whole thing. So,
oh my gosh, we'll promote it heavily. That's amazing.
I just, if anyone's listening and has that ability, I would love it. It'd be fun. Like maybe wait until he retires because you don't want to do it twice and keep adding to it. I get it. But just like, you know, just putting it out there into the ether that maybe someone will jump on that, because that would be, I just want to know how long it would be. I'm sure it's really long. Like he has the most charges taken in the NBA over the last decade. That's like just such a weird stat.
Get some like classical music, like that Christmas classical music. I'm not a classical music guy, but Carmina Brenna, I think, is the name of the very iconic, you know, like high soprano voices singing in unison. Doot, 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 doot. That would be perfect backdrop for just a supercut of Ersan Ilyasova charges. And meanwhile, these Giannis dunks, you're absolutely right. It's impossible to choose. And some of these that I go back at the time, they looked so incredible. And now that's like, oh yeah, he did that same thing on Tuesday. You know, like they're so not as incredible anymore because he does them routinely. So you're right. Curating this thing is going to be tough. I can do it though. I have the faith that we can get a pretty good list. And as I mentioned on the last podcast, it's going to expand to 24 when Giannis turns 24 in early December. We're going to make the list even a little bit bigger.
Yeah, and I think you made a really salient point there in talking about like, oh yeah, Giannis dunks, like that was really cool. Oh, but he did that, he's done it before. Like I feel like we're all kind of spoiled by watching Giannis on such a consistent basis. You know, being in Milwaukee, I don't think nationally people watch Giannis outside of the hardcore NBA fans who are on like League Pass like every night, stuff like that. Like people don't watch Giannis all the time like we do. And it's easy to take for granted just like the insane things he does. But he's really, really good. Like we said, he's the MVP. he's the MVP front runner right now, and deservedly so. He does a little bit of everything, mostly a lot of everything. Just such a dynamic playmaker and scorer. He makes great defenders look totally powerless. Like we saw that multiple times against like Paul Millsap when the Nuggets were in town. Basically every night you just pick the defender and he's going to do something that they just can't stop. Defensively, he is, like I said, he's the linchpin for the Bucks. He can just make otherworldly plays when it comes to blocks, and you know, we know how good he is with the chase downs. So I think it's good to appreciate just the high level of basketball he's playing and has been playing throughout his time in Milwaukee, and he's still can get better. Like you look at his game and the way he's played this year, and there are definitely ways that he could be better. You mentioned his 3-point shooting, and just turnovers. 4.3 a game is his highest for his career. Granted, the ball's in his hands a ton, but just little things, like we're nitpicking because he's great.
He's going to be 24 in early December, guys. This should be his second year out of college if he were a normal human being, which, of course, he is not. And he's had a great year. The Bucks 14-6. He's Matt Velasquez. He's covering the Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can read all about the Bucks. Like we said, his story about sort of the state of the team at the quarter poll is coming up at jsonline.com. You can also find the Book of Giannis, which we've been talking about at jsonline.com. All kinds of Bucks coverage. Matt, thanks for joining us. Hopefully we will we'll have more wins to talk about next week.
All right. Yeah, whether or not they win, we will still be talking, which is always great.
Find the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts. Leave a review or a rating. Let us know what you think. Tweet at Matt Velazquez. If you don't like it, it's at Matt Velazquez. That's underscore VELAZQUEZ. If you do like it, come talk to me. I'm J.R. Radcliffe at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. on Twitter. And we will chat with you again soon. Thanks for listening.